Where else would you rather be? I'm Paul Clifford, CEO of the Penn State Alumni Association. Welcome to the people of Penn State. Each week on the podcast, you can expect to hear the voices of Penn Staters talking about what they're passionate about, and you can expect to feel the pride and the power of the Penn State Network. Today, speaking of power and pride, we are joined today by Lieutenant Colonel Rob Michaels from the class of 2002. He's also a Penn State Dickinson Law class of 2005 and has served in the United States Army Judge Advocate General's Corps since January of 2006. During his time as an Army lawyer, he's served in all military units all over the world. In addition to service in Iraq, Korea, and Europe, he most recently returned to the United States after serving for 2 years as the first ever U.S. Army Exchange Officer to the Republic of Poland. During that assignment, he was the operational law attorney to the general commander of the Polish Armed Forces, serving in that position when Russia invaded neighboring Ukraine. So a lot of great stories on the horizon from Lieutenant Colonel Rob Michaels. Rob, welcome to the people of Penn State.
Oh, it's an honor to be here. Thanks so much for having me.
Before we jump into your career, tell everybody how you became a Penn State Nittany Lion.
Well, I would say it's typical and atypical at the same time. I born and raised Pennsylvania boy from north of Scranton, a little town called Athens, Pennsylvania. Where I grew up, everybody was either a Penn State fan or a Notre Dame family. And my family had no connection to either university. But my sisters and I were all competitive swimmers in high school. And my two older sisters went one summer for a Penn State swim camp. And the two of them absolutely fell in love with the university. Both of them ended up at Penn State at some point. My oldest sister ended up at Penn State Dickinson Law. And then the younger of the two older sisters went to Penn State University Park. I was absolutely determined at that point not to go to the same college as my sisters. Didn't want to do it. I wanted to go far, far away. But after my sisters went there, my parents took me to some football games. They took me to some basketball games. I really got acquainted with the university. Fall of my senior year, my father forced me to apply to Penn State, forced me to do it. And we had rolling admission at the time. So I applied fall. And Penn State was the first acceptance letter I got. I got just a few days before Thanksgiving of my senior year. And there was just something about getting that acceptance letter in your hand where all my thought process about it changed. And it did not take long. And I think by Thanksgiving, I decided that Penn State was where I was going to go. And that turned out to be the best decision of my life.
So first, let's start off. I'm a Northeastern Pennsylvania guy, too. I grew up in the Hazleton area. We call your area, we call it the Northern Tier. And I guess Sayre, right? Sayre's up there, too.
Sayre. And then right across the border is Waverly, New York. So I grew up in that little hamlet there. Like I said, all Notre Dame fans or Penn State fans. That was it. So
absolutely. So you come to Penn State and were very involved as a student. Kind of walk us through the various activities that you were involved in.
Sure. So I'll be honest, I didn't start out being that involved. I was very much, when I came to Penn State, an introverted person. And I will be honest, for that first year or so, I was really intimidated just by the pure size of Penn State. And so I didn't get that involved my first year, year and a half. But sometime, I think it was in my sophomore year, I just decided that it was time to get out of my comfort zone. So I remember the day I walked into the hub and they had that activities board, the bulletin board, where people were posting all these pictures and flyers from for student activities. And I just started pulling some down. I'm like, I'm going to go get involved in some student organizations. And that was really a turning point for me. And I remember at the time I was a political science major, was very interested in politics. So a lot of the organizations that I was interested in were political oriented groups. But I remember the first club I went to was in the Willard Building. I remember walking in. I remember the people that were in that room, and some of them are still some of my best friends that I've ever had 20 plus years later. And that group of friends that I made really then kind of pulled me out of my shell. So I ended up in I was in student radio. I was in student government. I was very involved with the Catholic community. I was involved in some veterans support organizations, but that really all came from just taking that leap of faith and pushing myself out and saying, I want to get out of my comfort zone.
Well, and we were talking off air, you've made some lifelong friends. Go ahead, yeah. Give some shout outs to those guys that you worked on the radio shows with.
So first big shout out is to Chris Buchanani, the host of the obligatory Penn State podcast, and his wife, Terry. They are lifelong friends, and they are the ones I stay with every time I come home for a Penn State football game. So big shout out to the two of them.
That's great. To our audience, mention of the obligatory Penn State podcast is not an endorsement. I want to be clear about that. No, those guys do a good job, and they certainly have a lot of fun. Who can't love Mike the Mailman?
Oh yeah, he's great. I mean, I came home from Poland in June, and you know, interestingly, I'm at Fort Leonard Wood in the heart of the Ozark Mountains of Missouri, right. And somehow I found that there's actually a fairly convenient way to get back to State College. So I got my season football tickets back. And that first game this past fall, I was back, and Mike the Mailman showed up, and I was sending my sisters pictures of us. I said, I'm tailgating with Mike the Mailman. Like, I've achieved legendary status. So,
yeah, Mike's a great guy. So, Rob, when you came to Penn State, kind of what was your initial career goal, and how did that morph, if at all, during your time here?
It didn't, actually. I was I grew up in a military family. Both of my grandfathers were World War II veterans. My father served in the military. Like I said, my oldest sister, Becky, was an Army JAG. That was just something that I always wanted to do. It was a passion of mine. I just grew up in a family where we looked at military service as a noble pursuit. That was a goal for me from as long as I can remember back in my childhood, was getting the military. The problem was that I was also born with no hearing in my right ear. And so that was certainly a challenge to be overcome. I was very interested in politics, and political science was my major, but really I was trying to find a way to get into the military. I remember it was my freshman year. I just kind of decided, you know, it may not work, but I'm going to take the leap of faith. So I walked over to Wagner Building, the ROTC building, walked up to the third floor, or as the Navy folks will call it, the third deck. and I think the only reason I think at the time I picked the Navy was because I'd been a swimmer in high school, right? So I thought, like, well, I'm a better swimmer than I am a runner. That was really the only thought that went into it. But I volunteered. I said, I want to do ROTC. I want to be in the military. And so I signed up for Navy ROTC. So my sophomore year, I did Navy ROTC. I was involved in the color guard. So I carried the colors at the Penn State, Ohio State game that year. Did it, fell in love with it. Absolutely fell in love with the military. And I was convinced that this was my calling. At the end of the year, they sent me for the physical, and I knew, like, well, this might be a problem. And sure enough, they said, well, you know, look, he's got this hearing problem. He's not going to be able to get a commission in the Navy or in the military service in general. And so that was it. And I was just absolutely devastated by the whole thing. Absolutely devastated. But my sister, like I said, was an Army JAG. I went to her promotion that summer. And her boss, the senior JAG in an office we called Staff Judge Advocate, her boss, after her promotion, took her lieutenant's bars and tried to give them to me. And she said, maybe you would want to use these. And I told her, you know, I really wish I could. It's a dream to do this, to be in the military. But I, you know, I just failed a Navy physical, right? So I don't think I'm going to be able to come in. And I will never forget, she said, well, if you go to law school, I think the Jack Corps would probably probably take you. And that had been, you know, I was always interested in law as well. And that had been in the back of my mind. But that took it from the back of my mind to the front. I went into my my senior year and I took the bar, took the LSATs and applied to a number of law schools. The only one at that point I really wanted to go to was Penn State. I was truly drank the Kool-Aid by that point. And in the spring semester, I got my acceptance letter to Penn State Dickinson. So I, when I graduated, I made the drive down to Carlisle. At that point, there was only one campus and it was in Carlisle, right. Pennsylvania, drove down there and you got to go back to like where, what my goal was and how it changed. My first semester, you fill out this form and it says, what do you want to do? What kind of law do you want to practice? The only thing I wrote on that was I want to be a JAG officer. That was it. And I remember I had an interview with the career services folks and they said, that's it. And I said, yeah, that's the only thing that I want to do. And then I remember they were telling me, well, you might need to have a plan B, right? Cause I explained to them the hearing problem. But I applied that year and Penn State Dickinson had a number of faculty members that were former JAG officers. And I really spent time with them, and tried to really kind of soak up their journey and their path to the JAG Corps and how they got to where they were. But every year I applied for one of the JAG Corps summer internships and I applied for the Navy. I applied for the Air Force. I applied for the Army. Didn't get a single one of them. And it was because I kept telling them, well, you know, I had this hearing problem and that was really the end of it. I spent summers working at the public defender's office in Gettysburg, Pennsylvania. And then the second year, I was doing my finals in the spring semester, and I walked down the hallway of Old Trickett Hall by the career services office, and they had just posted a flyer saying that the Carlisle Barracks JAG office was hiring a summer legal intern. And that Carlisle Barracks is a tiny little army base that's about a mile and a half, 2 miles from that law school. And so I grabbed that flyer. I called them that day, applied within, I think, the next 24 hours, interviewed a few days later and was offered the job. And I spent that summer working for a gentleman by the name of Tom Kane. He was a civilian attorney in that JAG office. And I just thought to myself, well, if this is my opportunity to get my dream, I am going to take advantage of it. I'm going to go all out. So I did everything with them. I got up, I went and exercised with the soldiers. I did all of it. I was trying to just to live that life as much as I could. And so this gentleman, Tom, took me under his wing. At the end of the summer, he said to me, hey, have you ever thought of actually doing this and becoming a JAG officer? I said, oh, I'd love to. I said, but I don't know that I'm gonna be able to because I've got this hearing problem. And I remember very distinctly, he said, if you want it bad enough, I'll help you get it. And he did. Man, he called the career services office and said, I'm going to keep them. And I had a field placement. I worked in the JAG office that my entire third year of law school, thanks [S2] Wow. [S1] To the career services team and Mr. Kane. And he helped me fill out the application. He helped me prep for that interview. And I got my JAG offer a few days after Christmas. And then, they took me to the army doctors there, gave me a physical and I was off to the races. And that was all that kind of that right time, right place, right people. But between, the career services office there at Dickinson Law, Penn State Dickinson and Mr. Kane, the dream came true. It was amazing.
And what an amazing story of kind of the influence that mentors can have on your career. I was going to accuse you of, I didn't realize that you wanted to become a lawyer after after you went to ROTC, because I was going to say you go to the Navy deck, right? And I was thinking, Is this a guy who wants to be like on A Few Good Men, right? Are you a lieutenant Taffy?
Well, I mean, I'll be honest. You certainly watched the show, right? I mean, that I think is probably the first exposure I ever had to the JAG Corps, right? And every time I've done recruiting, I've done outreach stuff, even when I was in Poland, I had Polish military judges ask me about A Few Good Men. I'm like, hey, look, you know, it's an inspirational film. You know, I mean, it's not that accurate, but it's certainly a recruiting tool for sure. But yeah, I did not have A Few Good Men aspirations when I went up to the third floor or the third deck of Wagner Building. So
this is the People of Penn State. I'm Paul Clifford. I'm joined today by Lieutenant Colonel Rob Michaels of the U.S. Army JAG Corps. Rob, I'm getting a note here that I need to ask you about your run for student body president. What can you tell us about your attempt to become the student body president here at Penn State?
Oh, that was one of those epic failures that was very life shaping. You know, I had this great group of friends that really kind of pulled me out of my shell. So I ran for student body president, and I think out of the six candidates, I came in fifth, right? So it was not close, not by a long shot, but I really met some fantastic people through that experience. And so out of that failure came some really great lifelong friends. And I did end up getting involved in student government that year, but I was not a successful nor competitive candidate for student body president.
Now, when people think of the JAG Corps, when I think of it, right, I think of either working on a domestic army base or maybe working in Washington, D.C. and practicing law. But you joined the Army and were almost immediately deployed to Baghdad. What was that like and kind of what's the role of JAG as part of a forward unit?
Yeah, I volunteered. I came in January 2006, and that was really one of the peaks of the war in Iraq. And so I volunteered for a unit that was going to Iraq, the 1st Cavalry Division, based out of Fort Cavazos, Texas. So I reported to I graduated from the JAG School in Charlottesville, Virginia, in April. Reported directly down to 1st Cav. And a couple of days later, and I was in Iraq in October. And that was really the time of what we ended up being called the surge, right? The famous surge. So my role, I was brand new to the Army, brand new to the JAG Corps. And so at the very beginning, my role was I was doing legal assistance, which is you're helping soldiers with those life issues, those life legal issues that come up. But you're far away from home. And so you can't deal with things like, you know, the child support, you know, child custody, the, you know, all of those basic legal issues. When the surge happened, that was General Petraeus came over, and we really did a big focus on helping the Iraqis build their legal system. And so somehow this young attorney, myself, who had been a lawyer for less than a year, was working with Iraqi judges, Iraqi military attorneys, and trying to help them build their military justice system. It was a really extraordinary thing. I mean, because I didn't have that much practice time at that point, but it was extraordinary. I mean, we're traveling around Baghdad and meeting with these individuals and helping them, build their functioning court system. The role of a military lawyer in a forward deployed unit. I mean, there's a lot of roles that we have. One, you know, operational law attorney. I mean, we advise on the law of armed conflict, international law. We do administrative law. We do legal assistance. And in most of these types of environments, we help our partner nations as far as the structure of their legal system. And that's what I ended up doing.
So you were deployed with your Penn State roommate. How did that come about? Like in all of the Army, right? How did you all end up in the same place?
So that's my second shout out is to Josh Sullivan. I was a senior at Penn State when 9/11 happened. I lived in an apartment right behind the old Atherton Hotel, now the Graduate, with four other guys. Josh was the only one at that time that had any connection to the military. He was doing ROTC. My Navy days had ended by this point. But we watched this, you know, the whole thing unfold. My roommate, Dan Miller, was so moved by this that just a few weeks later, he volunteered for the Marine Corps. And he ended up in Iraq around the same time that I was there. But just out of pure luck, you know, I'd gone through law school, gotten into the JAG Corps, and ended up in Baghdad. Josh was commissioned into the reserves, and he was getting ready to get deployed. And so we were talking via email, and the thought was at that point, at least what they were telling him, he was going to go to Afghanistan. And so, you know, they moved him to Kuwait, and we were exchanging emails, and then I didn't hear from him for a few days. And then he sent me an email, and he said, hey, do you want to have lunch? And I said, what are you talking about? And I said, where are you? And he said, I think I'm like a few hundred yards from you. And they had redirected him at the last minute. And so I was 9 months into my deployment, 15-month deployment at that time. But that day, you know, I went over, I met him. And sure enough, he had gotten redirected just coincidentally to the same base that I was at. And we had this big emotional bro hug out there. And we went, that base was built around one of Saddam Hussein's old palaces. So we went to the top of that palace, and I had my Penn State flag in my pocket of my uniform. And we unfurled that flag and have a picture of the two of us that day standing on the roof of Saddam's palace with our Penn State flag.
That's amazing. That's amazing. We've had a number of different experiences, but one that really stood out to me was your time as an embedded JAG officer with the Polish Army. Yeah. First, and you were the first person ever selected to do something like that. So how did that come about, and kind of what was the need to have an American attorney kind of embedded in that kind of position?
Well, it was a very new concept. The exchange program is something that's existed in the military for quite a while, but the JAG Corps had never had an exchange officer to Poland. The senior JAG officer in the entire Army, we call him the Judge Advocate General of the Army, at the time was a gentleman by the name of Lieutenant General Chuck Petey, who's in for time. But I had worked for him before at a prior assignment. And so I had just come home from Korea. Like, I had just had a 14-month tour in Korea, during which, you know, the pandemic happened. And I was came home, and I was assigned to the Pentagon, which was fantastic for me because almost all of my family lives in the Northern Virginia, D.C. area. So this was the first opportunity for me to be close to home in a very, very long time. And I was just really enjoying it. But General Petey had decided, when he looked at the things that were happening in NATO and Eastern Europe, that he went with one of the senior legal advisors to the Polish military and said we should exchange legal officers as part of this program. So I'm working at the Pentagon, happy as can be, just a couple months home from Korea. And the first phone call I got about it was in October, I believe. A friend of mine that was working in the assignments office said, hey, you speak Polish, right? And I said, no. And he said, do you want to learn? I was like, what are you talking about? And he had told me they were really creating this position. And a couple of the folks at the Pentagon who were involved in this knew that my family was of Polish ancestry. And during a tour, previous tour in Europe, I spent a lot of time traveling around Poland. I wanted to learn about where my family was from. I wanted to learn about my ancestry and my heritage. And I really wanted to learn about the country. And so initially when they called me, I said, no, I just got home. I'm good. I'm fine. And that was the initial end of the conversation. And then a few weeks later, a friend of mine called and said, hey, they're going to bring this up again. And, you know, they really want you to take this position. And so I got a call on a Thursday from my old boss, who was helping create this position. And she sold me on it. She told me why it was so important and why they wanted me. And And I asked, I said, how long do I have to think about it? And she said, you got till tomorrow. I think I was about 3 miles into that run. And I said, all right, I'm going to do this. This is a once in a lifetime kind of opportunity. So I called the colonel back, said, I'm in. By the next week, the assignment had been approved. And then 2 months later, I pinned, promoted to lieutenant colonel, and I was pulled from my job at the Pentagon. And I spent the next 6 months learning Polish through the Defense Language Institute and 40 hours a week of intensive Polish language studies. And then I deployed to Poland in August of 2021.
So, Rob, in the featured alumni story about you and the Penn State Dickinson Law, you talked about where you were when Russia invaded the Ukraine. Tell us about that day, that moment, that experience.
Yeah, I mean, that's one you'll clearly not forget. That morning, I'll be honest, obviously the buildup, it was on the news. Everybody kind of knew, hey, something's brewing next door. And so I had been sleeping with my iPad on. I was streaming, American news. And some point that night when it happened, in my kind of semi-awake status, I knew, all right, well, this is happening. I got up early that morning. And I remember I was in the bathroom, I was shaving, and I had the iPad going. I looked down, and they had a map of where the attacks had happened, and it really dawned on me, like, oh wow, I mean, that's just a couple hundred miles like that way. So I got up, I was going to work, and as I was going in, I was getting text messages, phone calls from other Army officers saying, hey, our unit's coming over. I had text messages saying, hey, we're already here. And then the legal team at US Army Europe in Germany called and said, hey, we've got to really build the legal authorities and the legal structures for the U.S. Army to be in Poland as part of this this deterrence mission. And they had sent a number of these legal documents to my team, my Polish counterparts, and said, well, this is urgent. We need to review this stuff. So I got into the office. By the time I got there with my Polish colleagues, they already had them, these documents. They were already reviewing them. And I sat down, read through them. And then once we all had read through them individually, I mean, I remember we sat and we said, all right, let's do them together now. And we went line by line through these documents and these agreements to see, what disagreements there were between the Polish military perspective and ours, right? And we went through it. And whenever there was an issue, we talked it through, we came to an agreement. And that took quite a while. And when we got through it, I said, I think they want these signed today. and we took them to my first line Polish boss, Colonel Jacek Joba. He looked at them. And then I said, again, I think these need to be signed today. We have U.S. troops en route right now. And he said, all right, let's go. So we walked just a few doors down the hallway into the office of the commanding general, General Jarosław Mika, one of the two four-star Polish generals. It was evening at this point. And, little old me, I sat there in General Mika's office and I explained to him in English, hey, here's what these documents are. Here's what they do. This gives us the ability to work with you on Polish soil. And then my Polish colleagues kind of went through some of the finer details in Polish and briefed him in Polish. And then we got up. General Mika said, just give me a few minutes. And so we got up, walked out of his office, stood outside for a few minutes. And then he came out, had signed them, and handed me the English copy. And he just shook my hand. He said, good luck. And I said, thank you, sir. And then we took those things and we were sending them to all the American commanders, all the Polish commanders. And that was really the beginning of the Polish and U.S. military operating together in response to what happened in Ukraine.
Yeah, kind of let us know, what was the environment in Poland, right? It doesn't directly border with Russia, but shares a border with the Ukraine, right? There are, I'm imagining, certainly military concerns of carryover of the engagement that's going on there. But also there was a huge influx of refugees. Kind of what were the Polish people thinking about during that time?
Well, I think it was really interesting to see it. It was incredibly moving to see it. I mean, Poland as a country, I mean, I joke in how I try to explain this to some of the American commanders that came through and American authorities, that if you were to draw up a list of like the worst things that could happen to you as a country, as a people, and you rewind about 120 years of Polish history, I mean, they have checked every one of those things off, right? I mean, they had been invaded multiple times. They ceased to be a country at some point. I mean, they were the victims of genocide. I mean, they were enslaved. I mean, they were used for forced labor. And then they were subject to, you know, forced a communist system on them. And what was really amazing, I think, is that Poland, more than any country I've been to, served in, remembers their history, I think, better than anybody. And so the reaction from the Polish people was this extraordinary resilience that you saw. I mean, it was really unbelievable. I mean, there were veterans that had been through World War II that, man, if they could get a rifle and a uniform, they would, you know, they fought for their country in 44, man, they would do it again. It was extraordinary to see. And the refugees that were coming in were, I mean, they were being welcomed into homes, into the communities. I mean, it was an extraordinary thing to see. And what was really impressive to me as an American officer was the impact that we had as Americans when we showed up, and we were the first ones there. And I mean, there was this kind of, all right, you know, they're standing with us type moment that, I mean, I had walking around Warsaw. I mean, you had, you know, elderly folks coming up and getting pictures with you, kids, coming up, pointing at the American flag on your shoulder. And I was keeping extra American flag patches in my pockets to give out to the little kids when they came and they walked up to me. It was, I think, one of the most resilient responses I've ever seen. And it was really inspiring, really inspiring to see.
This is the People of Penn State. I'm Paul Clifford. I'm joined today by Lieutenant Colonel Rob Michaels of the U.S. Army JAG Corps. Well, Rob, at the end of each podcast, we like to have a little bit of fun with some quick hitter questions. So I'm going to throw some at you if you're all right.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. You've done 4 overseas assignments, right? What's the first thing you do when you get back to the U.S.?
So I don't think that we realize as East Coasters how solid our like hoagie / sub game is. And I don't know what it is, but almost every overseas tour, when I get on a plane and I start heading back towards America, it's like a Pavlov's dog response of I need a good old East Coast sub. So I almost always end up flying into DC, and I've got it mapped out now, like all the places within like about 10 miles of Dulles Airport where I can go. And it doesn't matter if like my family's saying, oh, we got dinner waiting for you, whatever. I will get in my rental car. I will go to you know, the sub shop. And I'll sit in my car and eat myself a big Italian hoagie. And there's something about the taste of it and the smell of it, where just every time it clicks in my mind, like, okay, you're home. Like, you're back. You're home. You know, this is your moment. So.
All right. So I'm also a sandwich aficionado. So where is like your go-to place? You could have one sandwich from anywhere in the world. Where is it from?
All right. Non-endorsement here. However, I would say they're Wegmans. There's a Wegmans next to Dulles Airport, and that is my go-to spot, right?
So I have been on record as saying the Wegmans here in State College, it's the best sub that you can buy in State College, which is a little sad, right? But go ahead.
I appreciate, you know, I listened to another one of these, and there was a Penn Stater who moved to Indiana.
Oh yeah.
And opened a sub shop, right? And and again, it's like you take it for granted until you move away and realize that you don't have it anymore, right? There's something magical about it. There really is. So
absolutely. And you're referencing our most popular episode of the podcast for whatever reason is about a sub shop in Indianapolis, which is great. Shout out to Christina Meza out there doing a great job. That's amazing. That's amazing. All right, next one. The most unique place you've ever watched a Penn State football game?
Baghdad. And it was, again, my roommate was there. So back then, 2006, and this is when you sound old, right? On those little those bases that we had, we didn't have Wi-Fi and there was no streaming, right? So the only games that we could watch were the ones that were being broadcast on the Armed Forces Network, right? And that the one that I remember distinctly, it was Penn State, Notre Dame. And so that was obviously the nationally broadcast. So Armed Forces Network had it. I just happened to have keys to, there was a little courthouse on Camp Liberty. And as one of the Jags, I had keys to that. And in the courtroom, there was a big flat screen TV. And we had this, you know, little hookup to an old school antenna that we had stick on one of the concrete barriers outside that building and hooked that up to the TV. And we were playing around that, climbing on those barriers, trying to get that thing aimed at the dish properly to get the game. And we did. And so we sat there, I think it was 1 a.m. We sat in a courthouse, in a courtroom in Baghdad on Camp Liberty and watched that Penn State Notre Dame game. It was 31-10. I still remember. And my other buddy that was a JAG officer in my unit went to Notre Dame. And so we got to sit there and watch that. And he was heartbroken, absolutely heartbroken. But that was a great night.
That is great. Who is your favorite professor here at Penn State?
She's retired now, but Dr. Carol Reardon, history professor.
Yeah.
I had this Civil War history class with her, which I will fully confess, you know, if she's listening, she gave me a C. I deserved it. I absolutely deserve that C. She said I had the worst case of senioritis she'd seen in 40 years of higher education, which was probably true. But she and I stayed in touch. And one of the things that she really taught me, which was absolutely critical to what I did in Poland, was using history as a tool to explain how we view the current world. And that really became so much of what I did in Poland. And so while I got a C in her class, I did learn something for sure. And she's been absolutely instrumental to me. We keep in touch.
That's amazing. She's a favorite of our producer, Vincent Longaro's as well. She didn't give you a C, you earned a C.
I earned that C. I absolutely did. And she misses an opportunity to tell people that, oh, I gave him a C. But I deserved it for sure.
That's funny. If you could have dinner with anybody, who would it be and why?
All right. So I'll give you, I'm a lawyer. You never give a straight answer. I'll give you two. One who's alive, one's not. I mean, the one that's alive, I would go James Franklin. And the reason being, I find it fascinating. In the military, you kind of become a student of leadership and leadership styles. And it's really interesting. I find, you know, James Franklin, I love to listen to his press conferences. He really speaks with a lot of military-esque leadership tones. And it's fascinating because really we're in the business of leading that. It's not the same age group of people, right? I mean, the football players and the young soldiers that work with me. And I really just love to sit there and pick his brain about how do you get, you know, some of these young folks to really put their own personal interests aside to work for the betterment of the team and compare notes. I think that'd be fascinating. And then the one who's not alive, my mother, I mean, she passed away when I was in high school. And she said, she told a friend of hers not too long before she passed, she said, boy, I think Rob would really want to be in the military, but I don't know that he's ever gonna be able to get that because of his hearing problem. So I would love to sit down with her, put the get up on and be like, yeah, I made it. I made it, Mom. So
you, your mom, and James Franklin eating Wegmans hoagies.
Yeah, absolutely. With a bottle of wine, for sure.
There you go. you've been all around the world, right? You've had interactions with Penn Staters. What's your most unusual We Are moment? Either where you saw somebody and you called it out or you got hit with it?
Well, I mean, certainly it happened in Baghdad. It certainly happened in Korea. And I'll tell you that one of the things that I don't think gets enough publicity or push is the impact that the World Campus has had. That is a very popular thing amongst service members. You can't go to really any military base around the world where they have these education centers and there's brochures and pamphlets for the Penn State World Campus. So I would challenge you to say that, you know, if you walked around on pretty much any American military base and you've got something Penn State on, you're going to get a "we are," because those soldiers are using that GI Bill, and they'll come up and they'll say, "Hey, I'm enrolled in Penn State, you know, too. I'm studying this. Did you go to Penn State?" Yeah. So that's been really, really cool. But yeah, I mean, I've had them "we are's" in Korea, Baghdad, Poland, all over. Yeah.
That's great. What is your favorite Penn State sport?
Well, football, but I will say a close second is women's volleyball. I mean, I went in the era of Russ Rose, and I think we won like 185 games in a row or something like that, right? And I don't know if it's still the same way, but you could leave the Penn State football game, walk down the hallway, and then you went into rec hall and had yourself a volleyball game. It was great. Yeah. So, but yeah, I'm a big volleyball fan. I mean, I don't know how many championships we won in a row during my time, but that was awesome. Loved it.
And your favorite flavor of creamery ice cream?
Bittersweet mint, for sure.
That is a popular choice here on the People of Penn State. Well, Rob, we want to thank you for joining us on the People of Penn State podcast. We want to thank you for your service to our country. We really appreciate you joining us and allowing us to pass your story on to fellow Penn Staters.
Well, it's been an honor to have you, for you guys to have me. I really appreciate it, and look forward to seeing you all back in State College.
We'll see you soon. Thanks to our producer, Vincent Longaro, and our guest relations coordinator, Abby Clark. And thank you all for tuning in. If you liked today's episode, I hope that you will subscribe to the People of Penn State podcast on your favorite podcast app of choice. Go ahead and give us a like, write us a review, help other people find these great stories that we're sharing on the podcast. If you're a member of the Penn State Alumni Association, thank you for your support. And if you're not yet a member, what are you waiting for? Go to our website at alumni.psu.edu, and you too can become a member of the world's largest alumni association. Thanks again for listening and for all you do for the university, for the glory, and for the future. We are!